Welcome to the FF Faceoff, where fantasy football is debated. Here are your hosts from the East Coast, who've never heard a bet they didn't like, Michael Hoff and Anthony Servino.
My mic's not on. What is going on, everybody? This is the FF Faceoff. I am your host. Now that my mic is turned on, Anthony Servino, follow me on Twitter at The Real NFL Guru. Follow the show at the FF Faceoff. We can be found at all the top social media and podcast platforms. And today we are going to dive back into the NFL draft. We spend so many weeks, so many months covering the draft leading up to it, and we have to do our due diligence afterwards. Talking about the ramifications, yesterday we did a reaction and recap show. Today, we're going to go over my draft grades. And I spent a good chunk of my day yesterday grinding this article out that you can find over at thegamedaynfl.com. It is my draft grades for all 32 teams. I also ranked the teams from worst to first to worst, however you want to look at it. And it was a great article. Today, I actually worked on my top five draft steals, which should be published either tonight or tomorrow morning. Really excited for that one. I used Marcus Mosher's top 150 big board that you can find over at thegamedaynfl.com right now. Let's get into the news. Before anything else, and there's not a lot of news right now, right? The draft's over. A lot of undrafted free agents joining their new teams that they're going to try to make the roster, this offseason and training camp. But we're going to lead off with the New England Patriots. And every year, it's the New England running backs. Who's going to be their starter? And out the gate, the Athletics, Jeff Howe. Also, Jeff is a longtime beat reporter for the New England Patriots, is reporting that Damian Harris and Sony Michel, and I quote, will be a solid 1-2 combination in 2021. I expect this, right? New England, they ride the hot hand. They have backs that do certain things well, and they exploit their best assets rather than try to have one guy do it all. Let's get a fantasy football spin on this, I guess. And just like a lot of backfields in the NFL, like 4 or 5 years ago, it was, oh my God, New England's backfield. What do? Do I avoid it? Do I take the cheapest guy? Now, running back by committee, it's the norm in the league, right? There is few and far between of the bell cow backs. And a lot more running back by committee. Go look at San Francisco. They added Trey Sermon in the draft. They added Wayne Gallman in free agency to a backfield that already included Jamichael Hasty, Jeff Wilson, Raheem Mostert. The top three, or let's call it four, I think Hasty is going to be the odd man out. But that's a loaded backfield to talk about. But focusing on New England, with this approach, listen, no matter who you target, they're not going to be expensive, right? They're coming off of a lull year, a really down year. That offense was dreadful. Whether it's going to be Cam or Mac Jones, I do expect this offense to improve. They brought in tight ends who can also block. They got pretty good receivers, especially a Kendrick Bourne, pretty good blocker on the outside. So I'm really excited to see the New England Patriots team bounce back. But they're going to run the football. They re-signed James White to a one-year deal. He's going to be in the mix on passing downs. But in terms of the early down and goal line work, This is going to be Sony Michel and Damian Harris. I expect Harris to be a little bit more expensive than Sony Michel, but really, I'm not even looking at ADP, but I assume that the average draft position on Patriots backfield is probably going to start right around the eighth round. I could be wrong, but without looking, I assume that that's where it's going to be. Let's go down to wire a little bit. The Broncos released Jeff Driscoll. I mean, one less quarterback to worry about, I guess. We're going to be looking at... here's a little bit of news. Vic Fangio came out and said that Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Locke, they're going to split reps throughout the offseason program. To me, this could be a true quarterback battle. And if Teddy ultimately loses to Drew Locke after how dreadful Drew Locke has been to start his career, this could be his last shot at a true week one starting quarterback job in the NFL. And I'm not a Teddy Bridgewater guy, but he is going to be an upgrade over Drew Locke. And I do believe Teddy Bridgewater is going to be the QB1 in week one, unless... Denver somehow, let's say things, we talked about Aaron Rodgers a lot on the show yesterday. I believe Green Bay, if they get the right haul, they should move him. Maybe Denver's like, look, because Denver could have had Justin Fields. They go the corner instead. Justin Fields obviously falls to the Bears, who traded up to get him at, I believe, pick 11. But there's a reason why Denver did not take a quarterback. And it's not because of Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Locke. Maybe there's something we don't know ahead in Denver. And we do know Denver had the best of luck drafting quarterbacks. They won their Super Bowl with Peyton Manning. So for what it's worth, if they want to go the veteran route, bro, you know, take your shot at Aaron, but I think the shot, you know, to take was this year because of the draft capital Denver had. Let's see anything else down the wire. Dallas, my Cowboys, they're not going to pick up the 50-year option of Leighton Vander Esch. Instead, they are saying they're going to try to work out a long-term deal. Sean Lee has retired, and I heard an interesting take, I believe, on the on Wiley and Acho show on FS1, saying that, listen, they got a couple of good years out of Sean Lee, but for the majority of his career, it was injury-stricken. Maybe they have the same inkling about Leighton Vander Esch, as terrific of a player that he is. They did draft him fully knowing about the, I believe, the neck and spinal issues. I believe they came up again last year. So maybe Dallas is like, listen, this guy's going to want a lot of money. First round talent. When he popped, I believe his rookie year, he was outstanding. We're going to have to pay him. So what does Dallas do? He's going to play obviously this year, but they drafted Jabril Cox in the fourth round. By the way, he did make my draft steals article. He was like a top 55 player on Mosher's board on a lot of boards. Off the ball linebacker. Terrific in coverage, questionable in between the tackles and stopping the run. But I believe he had a total of 3 or 4 years in college, like 9 picks and 23 deflections for a linebacker. That's outstanding. And obviously, Micah Parsons, the outstanding first-round pick, top 10, maybe even top 5 talent. Most people believe Parsons was the number one defensive player in this draft. So Dallas really bolstered their linebacker core. They brought in a tight hybrid type in Keanu Neal, listed as a safety. I think he'll be playing closer to the line. Kind of reminds me of a Roy Williams a little bit. So I'm really excited about this Dallas Cowboys defense. What they do with Leighton Vander Esch obviously remains to be seen. Let's go down the wire a little bit more, if it lets me. For what it's worth, DK Metcalf, the terrific second-year receiver out of Seattle, or third year now, he's going to try to qualify for the Olympics. You know, play football, focus on football. That's how I take that. You know, it's not like he's... Marquise Goodwin. You know, Goodwin was a career contributor, role player as a receiver. DK Metcalf has the opportunity to be elite. I would not mess around and risk injury for the Olympics. I get it, there's pride there, but stick to football. A little bit more out of Green Bay, and I find this interesting, and this is from NFL Network's Ian Rappaport, and I think we knew this. When the Patriots, when the Packers moved off of Rodgers, his quarterback coach really upset him. They moved off of Jay Kumerow, and Jay Kumerow wasn't a significant player, but I think there was a rapport there. There was a friendship there that apparently frustrated Aaron Rodgers. We knew that Aaron Rodgers was not happy when the Packers moved off of Jordy Nelson. I said this yesterday, marriages, relationships of all kinds. You know, if you work at a job and you don't get along with, some relationships are unrepairable. Like, what is it, in a case of a divorce, irreconcilable differences. I think that's where we are with Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers, irreconcilable differences. This is not happening. I think Aaron wants out, and I'm not sure. Listen, now last year, obviously Green Bay went to Jordan Love, and maybe they thought they had something. Aaron Rodgers brings them to another NFC Championship game. Jordan Love can't even lead the practice squad or can't even lead a B team in practice. That's a disaster. And now it seems like Green Bay, oh, we want you now. It's done. I think the damage is done in that relationship. And whether it's this offseason or next offseason, when a guy like Aaron Rodgers threatens to retire or hold out, that's not good. I think this is a lot deeper than what we saw with Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks. For me, this is a lot closer to Deshaun Watson before all this off-the-field stuff and allegations came out. Deshaun wanted out, and he was very adamant. He wanted out of Houston. I think we're a lot closer to the Deshaun Watson, Houston Texans situation than we are with Russell Wilson and Seattle, where that seems like an afterthought after a couple of free agent signings and a trade with the Raiders to bring in Gabe Jackson. Let's get into my draft grades. And what I'm going to do, something that I don't do often here, Sean Goglin is in the chat. What's going on, Sean? Nice to see you. What I'm going to try to do here, I'm going to pull the article up on the screen. I'm going to try to also put my camera window up here as well. So bear with me as I transition a little bit. As I put up the Hayden Hurst Podathon graphic, let's plug it a little bit. Obviously, we are coming for year two, July 9th, beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern, 24-hour podathon, partnered with the Hayden Hurst Foundation to fight the stigma against mental health. We have a terrific lineup of guests. We are trying to add more, and not only more, but bigger personalities. Bigger is always better, obviously. While I'm also transitioning to the screen, let's talk about our partnership with Underdog Fantasy. Go to Underdog Fantasy and sign up, I believe, through tomorrow. If you make a deposit, whether you are a new user or an existing user, you will receive an entry to the Best Ball Mania, a chance to win $1 million. So that's on them if you make a deposit. Go and use the promo code FACEOFF. That's FACEOFF. Or go on my social media. I believe I'm going to put it in the description as well. Go click on the link in the description for Underdog Fantasy. Let them know the FF FACEOFF sent you. Again, go to Underdog Fantasy. Use the code FACEOFF. FACEOFF. Let's get to these grades. Right now, my top team for my draft grades is the New York Jets. And let's scale it back to a year ago. A year ago, the New York Jets, I was picking them to win like 9 games, 10 games. And people thought I was out of my mind because I believed in Adam Gase, but it wasn't really Adam Gase. Who I really believed in was their general manager, the great Joe Douglas, comes from teams like Baltimore and Philadelphia with that winning pedigree. And I thought he would turn this franchise around. Obviously, it didn't happen last year. Last year was a nothing short than a disaster for this team. And what it did, it gave them the opportunity to blow things up. Sam Darnold is now in Carolina. Jamal Adams, you know, he's in Seattle, and they got a lot of draft capital and a lot of draft assets, and they put it to good use. And the New York Jets got their franchise quarterback of the future in Zach Wilson with the second overall pick. They come back and trade back up into the first round to select Elijah Vera Tucker. And what I love about Elijah Vera Tucker, not only did last year they select Mekhi Becton, the great left tackle, but they upgraded their line with Vera Tucker. What do I love about this guy? I love versatility. I like guys who can do a lot of things because there's injuries in the NFL. So Vera Tucker, I believe he's probably going to open up the year as a starting guard, but should something happen on the right or left side at tackle, Elijah Vera Tucker can also play that position as well. So versatility, a day one starter in both positions in the first round. And then my question has always been with the New York Jets. You look at Joe Burrow, what he came into last year, and it was A.J. Green, albeit, back end of his career. They drafted T. Higgins. They had Tyler Boyd. They have Joe Mixon, Sample and Uzoma at tight end. At the time, they had Gio Bernard. Pretty good skill position assets. Obviously, the line sucked. But the skill position players, the pass catchers, were there. Usually, when you pick at the top of the first round, your team's terrible. There's not a lot to work with. Joe Burrow had weapons in place. And he had a really good year until the injury. Let's fast forward to this year. Trevor Lawrence, number one overall pick. Jacksonville blows up their entire team. They had the number one defense, a defense a couple of years ago that brought them almost to a Super Bowl. They tore it apart. They got a lot of draft capital. So Jacksonville, they get the number one overall pick. They draft Trevor Lawrence. What didn't they blow up? Well, they lost a couple of, D.D. Westbrook, they let him go. Conley, they let him go. Keelan Cole with the Jets. We'll talk about him in a minute. But they had D.J. Chark, who really flashed 2 years ago, struggled last year, but who didn't with the quarterback play from Gardner Minshew, Jake Luton, and I think Glennon or one of those scrubs started a game. And Laviska Shenault looks like a fine player. And what does the Jacksonville Jaguars go out and do in free agency? Well, they sign Marvin Jones, big play threat, a veteran, a nice stability piece that Trevor Lawrence can lean on. Carlos Hyde, as great as he is as a rusher, he can catch passes. He can pick up blitz. So another quality signing. They have the undrafted free agent in James Robinson entering year two. And then in the back of the first round, they take Travis Etienne and pair him up with his Clemson quarterback, Trevor Lawrence. Ton of weapons. I like Jacksonville's offensive line a lot better than I liked Burrow's and a lot better than I like Burrow still. But let's go to the Jets. So I did not believe the Jets had great weapons. And they did what they did in free agency, right? They had Jamison Crowder. They still have him. They drafted Mims last year. In free agency, they go get Corey Davis. And I like Corey Davis. It took him a little bit to pop. It took him, 4 or 5 years to pop. But a former first-round talent, a top 10 talent, to be exact, from Tennessee. But and obviously, like I said, they brought in Keelan Cole. Good receivers, not great. And I say to myself, this is going to be like Sam Darnold 2.0. There's no great here. A lot of pretty good. I don't even know how much good we have in this wide receiver core, especially with the question marks of Corey Davis. Can he build off of his 2020 breakout? The running back room, you know, a bunch of guys. P. Ryan's going to go in his second year. Maybe he does something. So the Jets go out. They bolster the offensive line. They get the quarterback round two. They get Elijah Moore, Ole Miss wide receiver. All of a sudden, with Elijah Moore's ceiling, the pretty good receiving core with question marks with Corey Davis all of a sudden becomes good. It looks a lot better with second round receiver Elijah Moore than it did without him. And oh, by the way, the Jets weren't done yet. Fourth round, one of the best values on the board, North Carolina running back Michael Carter. And I'm in, I believe, three or four rookie drafts as we speak. And in three of them, I had already taken Michael Carter. I was picking at number 12, I believe, in two. And then the other one was a super flex, and Carter fell to me a couple picks into the second round. I'm all over this guy. And even if LaFleur uses a two-back committee, I believe Michael Carter, unless he falls on his face completely, is going to get a legitimate shot at the starting job. So they draft Wilson. They get an offensive lineman. They got the first-round offensive lineman last year. Sign a couple of receivers in free agency. Draft a run in the second round. Get a running back. All of a sudden, this Jets team looks pretty good. It looks promising on offense. It looks a hell of a lot more promising for Zach Wilson than it ever did for Sam Darnold. And the Jets go on. They get a couple of defensive guys, back-to-back safeties, and a cornerback in the fifth round. In fact, they drafted a second Michael Carter, a safety out of Duke. And I believe they're the only team in NFL history to draft the same player. Or not the same. A player with the same name. Or two players with the same name, however the hell you want to word it. But I love their draft. I think the New York Jets absolutely killed it. They received an A+, which was my highest draft grade. And let's go to another high draft grade. Let's pull it up. And obviously the second one is the Chicago Bears. Listen, of the first two picks, I don't give a damn what Chicago did. Let's call it what it is. This Bears draft is all about Justin Fields and Tevin Jenkins. Now, the Bears had a shot, and I included Justin Fields in my steals article. I believe he was a top five overall player in Mosher's top 150. He falls to pick 11. Chicago trades up to get him. The Bears are a franchise that their best quarterback to date was Sid Luckman. Before I don't know if anybody listening right now was even born when Sid Luckman played. Their second best quarterback, no, not Jim McMahon, they won a Super Bowl with him, not Rex Grossman, who brought them to a Super Bowl. No, I don't know how the hell that happened. Thank Devin Hester and Brian Urlacher for that. The second best quarterback in Bears franchise history, Jay Cutler. Jay Cutler, and I'm a big Jay Cutler guy. Like, I love Jay Cutler. I think if Jay Cutler had, like, a Tom Brady's mentality, Jay Cutler would still be winning Super Bowls. That's how highly I regard Jay Cutler's skill set and his arm. He had a cannon. Go to YouTube and watch his highlights with Alshon Jeffrey in Chicago and Brandon Marshall in Denver. He was outstanding. But for him to be any franchise's number two best quarterback of all time says a lot. Justin Fields has not stepped on the field yet, and already he could potentially be the best modern day Chicago Bears quarterback. And he hasn't played a snap at Soldier Field for the Chicago Bears. Their second round pick, Tevin Jenkins. Tevin Jenkins, I had going in the late first round, offensive tackle, Oklahoma State. They got him 39th overall. The two biggest needs on a football team in today's NFL, quarterback
left tackle, protect your quarterback. The Bears obviously had needs in both spots. With their first two picks, they get them both. Now, they did what they had to do to move up. They didn't have another pick in this draft until the fifth round, where they got another offensive tackle, Larry Broom out of Missouri. They got a couple of defensive assets. You know, in the late sixth and seventh round, Daz Newsome, a wide receiver, I believe, in the sixth as well. I don't care. I don't care what they did past Tevin Jenkins. Those two picks make or break this draft. They make or break this franchise, and they could very well have saved the jobs of Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, at least for one more year. Remember, wasn't it a couple years ago? I believe Nagy and Pace, Pace won Executive of the Year, I believe, and Nagy won Coach of the Year, and this is going back when they had that nice run. They have the capability. Like, if Chicago wins 10 games, and they were an 8-win team last year with a terrible offense. If, you know, winning, can you, you know, there's an extra game. Can Chicago really pull out two or three more wins, get to 11-6, 12-5? If that happens, and I don't know if the division is attainable with the Green Bay Packers, but if they can sneak into the playoffs, even if they win a division, if you give me 11 or 12 wins in Justin Fields' rookie year, not only will Pace and Nagy be in the running for those awards once again, they'll probably get a contract extension. How can you not give it to them? Now, if they miss, if Justin Fields flops, Chicago's set back again, and they'll be looking for a new head coach and general manager. But before we play it down, I love what they did. They had to be aggressive. They knew they had to be aggressive. And the fact that this guy was here outside of the top 10, they didn't have to mortgage as much as they thought they would have to move inside the top 10. This was a win for all parties involved, whether it's Fields, even Fields wins with Tevin Jenkins. I absolutely love what the Chicago Bears did. But again, past the first two picks, it really doesn't matter. Now, let's get to my two worst graded teams. My two worst graded teams, and really, let's call it three. Let's start with the Raiders. And I didn't bury the Raiders as much as I normally would. And Sean, I see you have a question in the chat. Let's get through the Raiders, and then I will address your super flex question, so bear with me. I just don't want to lose my train of thought right now. I gave the Raiders a C-. Alex Leatherwood, listen, I just said I had a late first-round grade on Tevin Jenkins. He was on the board at 17th overall. Instead, Alex Leatherwood, who was a projected second-round pick, that's who the Las Vegas Raiders get. I don't know if Alex... Listen, Leatherwood could be a nice player, could be a starting left tackle in this league for 12 years. You didn't have to pay the 17th pick in this draft to get him. You just didn't. They had a reach. They reached. They always reach. Which is a problem. And you think, like, Mike Mayock, when he was a network analyst, he was outstanding. I don't know what the hell happened. Maybe Gruden has too much power. But that's another story for another episode. Why I didn't completely bury the Raiders was the Trevon Moehrig pick. Trevon Moehrig was my number one safety in this draft. I guess other teams didn't think so. I had a first-round grade on him. A couple of safeties went ahead of him in the second round, and he fell to the Raiders' lap. So you reach for your first-round pick, and then you get immense value in the second round. And then the rest went downhill again. As the Raiders, Malcolm Kuntz out of Buffalo, a nice edge rusher, but they go get two more safeties, Divine Diablo, Tyree Gillespie. You draft three safeties on a team, on a defense, Las Vegas. Like, your defense, I don't even know if sucked is the word. You had needs at all three levels, and you take three safeties. I get Trevon Moehrig. I don't get the other ones. again, you address a need on the offensive line. You blew it up this offseason. I don't know. Maybe there's just so many needs. I don't know what to do here. But the three safeties thing, it's mind-boggling. It's like John Gruden has a vendetta against Derek Carr. Let's give you every opportunity to fail. Because that's what it looks like they're doing. So they get a C-minus from me. And then we're going to have some fun here. Because the other two teams that had worse grades than the Raiders, let's start with the New Orleans Saints. And I've said it all offseason so far. The New Orleans Saints, whether you want to admit it, Saints fans, whether the organization wants to admit it, you're in a short-term rebuild. You went all in on the final few years of Drew Brees' career. Why not? Try to get him another one. He's your best opportunity. Do I truly believe that they had a plan for after Drew Brees? I mean, I don't buy it. I don't buy Taysom Hill was Sean Payton's long-term plan. If he was, why is Jameis Winston competing for a starting job? Why Jameis Winston, a former number one overall pick? If your plan was Taysom Hill, there should be no competition. Yet, here we are. I don't quite believe they had a plan. We enter this offseason, and the Saints, they had a catastrophic salary cap problem. They had to make decisions to move off of contracts and talent. And their biggest loss, Janoris Jackrabbit Jenkins, had a terrific bounce back year last year. There's question marks about Marshawn Lattimore. There's also a little bit of injury and erratic history of, you know, erratic play history from Marshawn Lattimore. He's great at times, but sometimes he can get burnt. So you have this gaping hole at cornerback. You lose Trey Hendrickson in free agency. You lose Alex Anzalone, linebacker, in free agency. DeMario Davis is like in his 30s now. So what do the Saints do? This is not the best year for prospect pass rushers, prospect interior defensive linemen. I believe the Saints lost Sheldon Rankins too, if I'm not mistaken. So a lot of holes on this defense where last year they played really well at times. That defense really carried this team the past 2 years, believe it or not. So in the first round, they go and get a guy named Peyton Turner, defensive end out of Houston. I mean, Owe was still on the board who went to division rival Tampa Bay. Azeez Ojulari, I believe, was still on the board. He went in the second round. Who the hell is Peyton Turner? I know who he is. I didn't have a first-round grade on him, and I get the late in the first round, early second round, you can just mesh them because there is a cliff with first-round and second-round talent where they kind of blend. I get it, but I just don't like this pick. They go defensive end. There's the need. There's the ceiling. I don't understand it. Because their bigger need was cornerback. Then they go and get Pete Werner. Pete Werner is probably going to be a week one starter where Peyton Turner is going to be a rotational guy out the gate. Pete Werner will probably be starting at linebacker for New Orleans. I don't hate that pick. They waited until the third round. Paulson Adebo, cornerback out of Stanford. You wait until the third round to address what might be your biggest need on defense. That's where my issue is with New Orleans. You come back in round four, they take a quarterback. A quarterback! You're telling me you had a plan for life after Drew Brees. Yet you, and Taysom Hill's your guy. However, you bring in Jameis Winston, then in the fourth round, and an offseason where you have needs all over the place, you believe Taysom's your future, and you draft a quarterback in the fourth round. Ian Book, Notre Dame. Come back round six, offensive tackle, Kwon Baker round seven. You finally get a wide receiver. You want to get me started there? Let's do it. So the Saints Let's talk about the Saints. Your plan is Taysom Hill. Your mastermind genius plan, Sean Payton, Taysom Hill. You sign a former number one overall pick. They're going to compete for the job this year. You draft a fourth round quarterback. I don't know why you had the plan there. What do you need? You know, use that fourth round pick, get another corner. Use it somewhere else. How did the Saints win 2 years ago when Drew Brees was injured with Teddy Bridgewater? The defense stepped up, played outstanding. Same thing last year. Taysom Hill gets a shot. Taysom Hill looks pretty good. Unconventional type of offense, but the defense is what carried him. Now, this defense struggled until the Drew Brees injury, and then for like a good 3 to 5 week run, the Saints defense was the best in the NFL. And then they ran into Philly, and Jalen Hurts and Miles Sanders became the first two players. They ran for over 100 yards apiece. First players to do so since, I believe, 2017, Samaje Perine, the team formerly known as the Redskins. So if you're going to start Taysom Hill, you know this defense needs to be outstanding for the way they're going to run the ball and kind of utilize Taysom Hill's skill set and run the ball a lot and play dink and dunk passing. The defense isn't there. Offensively, whether it's Taysom Hill or Jameis Winston, how do you expect these guys to succeed? I get it. You have Alvin Kamara, elite. You have Michael Thomas. Now, I'm not a big Michael Thomas guy. I believe his success was because he was heavily, heavily targeted. We saw that dip last year. Obviously, a lot of issues with Michael Thomas, injuries off the field. You know, the quarterback's position was extremely, flammable, if you want to use that word. In New Orleans, it was a disaster for Michael Thomas. You lose Emmanuel Sanders in free agency, and you're left with Traquan Smith. You lose Jared Cook. Left with Adam Troutman. Who the hell is Adam Troutman? Of course, the fantasy world, the dynasty world. Maybe there's something here. Like, maybe it's Kobe Fleener. You ever think of the downside? So you really have nothing at tight end, or at worst, you have a question mark. Could ultimately pop. At number two receiver, if you're really still waiting on Traquan Smith, you haven't been watching football, you haven't been watching Saints football and paying attention. And then besides Traquan Smith, they have a bunch of guys. I understand this worked when Drew Brees was your quarterback, when Drew Brees was in his prime and he was throwing at Willie Snead and Marcus Colston and throw these names out there. Stallworth, Robert Meacham. That you could throw it to anybody. Drew Brees, this isn't Drew Brees in his prime. It didn't work last year or the year before at the end of Drew Brees' career. He couldn't make these no-name receivers work like he did in the past. Keith Kirk with Austin Carr. So you don't address corner, your biggest defensive need, until the third round. You don't get another receiver. Like this Saints team, you're in a rebuild. I gave the Saints a D. I absolutely hate the draft that they had. I would blow it up at this point, to be honest with you. There's that on New Orleans. Another team I wasn't very nice to. Actually, no, I'm sorry. Before we get into the other team that I wasn't very nice to, let's get into Sean Goglin. Let's get into your question. Oh, and we see ATL, Mikey, you have a question too. Let's get to Sean first and then ATL to you. Sean is asking, Anthony, I'm super lost with who to take with the second pick, 1.02 in my upcoming rookie draft. It's a super flex league, 100% needs a quarterback. All offseason, he thought he was going to take Justin Fields. Now he doesn't know. If Trevor's going to go number one, like obviously if Trevor's there, you take Trevor. If it's not, you know, if he goes, you're not going to take Mac Jones. Now, I like Mac Jones. You're obviously not taking him with the second overall pick in the Superflex. So that leaves us with Fields or Lance. Ideally, I would tell you, Sean, to take Trey Lance. However, the issue is Jimmy Garoppolo going to be on this team? If Jimmy Garoppolo is on this team in week one, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be the week one starting quarterback. I don't know when your draft is, Sean, but if it's not for a little while, and maybe we get some clarity on the Trey Lance Garoppolo starting job situation, I would wait until I make my decision. If we know it's going to be Trey Lance, I'm taking Trey Lance with that pick. Otherwise, it's between Zach Wilson and Fields. Believe it or not, I would probably take, I would go Lawrence. I would go Lance if he's a starter. If we don't know, then I think we bump Lance back. Since you say you absolutely need a quarterback, I might actually go Zach Wilson over Fields. And at the top of the show, I believe you were here for it. I talked up the Jets offense. I like the LaFleur, that he's the offensive coordinator. I like the weapons they brought in. I like the running back. I like the offensive line additions from the past two drafts. I would actually take, believe it or not, as horrendous the Jets have been, I think they turn it around with Joe Douglas, the general manager, leading the way. So I go Lawrence, Trey Lance 2, if we know he's a starter, if we're still uncertain, Zach Wilson, Fields, Mac Jones. And that's how I would handle that. ATL Mikey is asking if I am worried about Zach Wilson to the Jets, not talent point of view, but will Zach Wilson, who has lived in a shelter life, be able to adjust to the fast-moving New York City? Come on, man. I actually don't hate the question, but how do we know he lived a sheltered life? You know what I mean? Like, do we know, BYU quarterback, it doesn't mean he was living in the mountains in Utah. It's a big school. Like, he's seen cameras before. This isn't like the Amish country. No offense. Great food. But, like, this is 2021. I know it's going to be an adjustment, but, like, Carson Wentz was in a similar situation. You could say, well, Carson Wentz didn't handle Philadelphia media bad. He didn't handle it poorly. And if Carson Wentz can handle Philadelphia, what makes you think Zach Wilson can't handle New York? You know, Eli was possibly the best quarterback to ever manage the New York media. And where the hell is he from? So yeah, from that aspect, no, I'm not worried about that at all with Zach Wilson. What's going on, Julia? And look who's back, the official Young Hukou YouTube channel. Long time, man. Julia is saying the Saints, the biggest mystery. Yeah, obviously. I don't get it. I don't get what they did. Julia's asking, who are my three best drafted teams from over the weekend? Well, obviously the Jets, number one. Number two, Chicago. Number three, I think it's a toss-up. Now, I graded the Ravens, I believe, an A-. Let's double-check. Let me pull it up. So yeah, I gave them an A-, which means I like the Patriots and the Dolphins draft a little bit more. But when it comes to what teams really walked away, filling needs, and the Ravens didn't have a ton of needs anyway. I absolutely love what the Ravens did. Miami, I love their draft, but their first two picks. They do have very, very high ceiling, but they come with some injury concerns. Then Miami did some nice things in the second round, so that's why they were graded an A. New England, In that Draft Steals article I talked about at the top of the show, which I wrote up today, will be published tomorrow at the game day. One of my steals was Christian Barmore, the number one interior defensive lineman in this draft. New England, they have to trade 2 fourth-round picks in the second round to move up and get him, but what an outstanding value. He's an interior defensive lineman with pass rushing upside. And that could be extremely valuable, especially with Bill Belichick calling the shots. Absolutely love it for New England. They obviously got their quarterback without having to move up to get him. So that alone right there, they aced the draft because they were ready to move up. They were ready to go pay for a quarterback. They didn't have to. They probably, in fact, got the one they wanted. And I love Mac Jones to New England. I said it all off season long. If Mac Jones is going to work, it's San Francisco or it's New England because of the parallels to what he had to deal with in Alabama. So I absolutely love that for New England. Let's get back to and Sean saying his drafts this weekend. Yeah, I might go Zach Wilson over Fields, man, just because I think he has more to work with at his disposal. Chicago's line is still a work in progress. They took Tevin Jenkins this year, but again, the Jets last year, Mekhi Becton, they get the swing guard tackle this year in Vera Tucker. They bring in all these weapons, where in Chicago, you have Allen Robinson, David Montgomery, a couple of tight ends, questionable line, Tarik Cohen. I'm a little bit more comfortable with Zach Wilson's supporting cast. Maybe he doesn't have that pop receiver like an Allen Robinson. We don't know about Michael Carter yet, but there's no David Montgomery in New York right now. But there's a lot more. So like if Allen Robinson or David Montgomery got hurt for the Bears, they're going to be hurting. More so at receiver than running back because they have Cohen and Damian Williams. But like if Allen Robinson goes down, you have Miller and Mooney and Javon Wims. Whereas let's say Corey Davis goes down, Keelan Cole steps in. Guys like that. And believe it or not, I think Keelan Cole should be a starter for New York at three wide sets over Denzel Mims. And we haven't seen a lot of Mims yet, but Keelan Cole is extremely, extremely undervalued. I think he's a lot better than his spot on the roster or his contract. We've seen him pop a little bit a couple of years ago with horrendous quarterback playing Jacksonville. So let's go to the other team that I absolutely slaughtered in my draft grades. And this should come to no surprise if you listen to this show regularly. It's the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they received my worst, D+. You can't get much worse than that. And the reason why I give them a plus was because Najee Harris is an outstanding player. Maybe I'm very, very old school, where if you have, you can't win without a good offensive line. As old school as that sounds, go ask Patrick Mahomes why they lost that Super Bowl. So Pittsburgh, they lose Pouncey to retirement, Villanueva still unsigned. They lose a lot of assets on that offensive line, which was already regressing and aging. The biggest need they had was on that line. They also had a need at running back. They addressed running back first. And again, I love Najee Harris. Could be the best overall back in this class. We talked about this yesterday. Ben Roethlisberger, by midseason, maybe a couple weeks after, whatever he has left with his deep ball, really not there. It's not as effective. So when they were losing all those games, and I believe Jim Coventry a couple of weeks ago on his Wednesday spot noted that, it kind of runs along when Pittsburgh, after they go 11-0, they start losing all these games. There was no threat of a deep ball from Big Ben. So a defense, just keep everything in front of you, stop the run, and you really take out Pittsburgh's offense. Chase Claypool, because of the lack of a deep ball, he becomes null and void as well. So as good as Najee Harris is, if we're going to use the same narrative, the same context about a lack of a deep ball, so if there's no real threat, especially as the season grows older, of a deep ball, how are you going to stop Pittsburgh, no matter how good Najee Harris is, if you're lining up 6-7 guys in the box, putting the extra man in the box? Where is he running to? They needed an offensive lineman. Now, they did get an offensive lineman. They waited until the third round in Kendrick Green, and then back in the fourth round with Dan Moore Jr. Dan Moore Jr. is a project tackle. Kendrick Green will be, you know, he'll probably be their starting center in week one, so I don't hate it for a round three selection. You're going to get a week one starter. In round two, Pat Freiermuth, the Penn State tight end, deemed the second best tight end in this draft class behind Kyle Pitts. That's all well and good. But this isn't like a few years ago where it was Evan Engram and O.J. Howard and David Njoku. This isn't a couple years ago when it was T.J. Hockenson and Noah Fant. This year was Kyle Pitts and everybody else. It was a weak year for tight ends, just like it was a weak year for defensive linemen all the way around. Was there an immediate need for this tight end selection? You have Ebron under contract. Maybe that makes him expendable. I don't know. But you already have all these pass-catching weapons. I just don't understand the logic. Why not go, if you're going to go Najee Harris one, why not go offensive line, offensive line, offensive line? Why tight end, offensive line, especially in the second round? You got Green in the third, but you know he's not going to play all five positions. You need more than one. I would have taken another offensive lineman in that second round. There was a lot of value there, and I'll keep going back to Tevin Jenkins. I believe Sam Cosmi also fell to the second round, amongst others. Pittsburgh also lost a couple of pieces on defense, most notably Bud Dupree, albeit a one-year wonder, still a significant loss because he was a big-time contributor last season. They also had to release, because of salary cap issues, Mike Hilton. That's cornerback depth to that secondary. In that second round where they took the tight end, not really an immediate need, why not go get some more defensive depth and try to replenish one of those losses? I don't know. I'm not in love with what Pittsburgh did. Almost like I feel with the Saints, where they don't have a plan at quarterback beyond Drew Brees. Well, guess what? They don't have a plan for life without Big Ben. And if they did have a plan, I believe Big Ben would have already retired, or maybe they would say, okay, even though you want to play, you'll play at a discount. We have a plan. We have your heir apparent in place. They don't have that. So we get another year out of Big Ben, and maybe they start well early, but it's probably not going to end well in Pittsburgh. They get a D+. I absolutely hated their draft. Same thing with the Saints. Let's get back and see if we have any questions here. Julia is saying Justin Fields is not going to start the season. I think he does. I don't think they have a choice. They're in a situation in Chicago. I don't think you can get out of Nick Foles' contract, but Andy Dalton, you're giving him pennies to the dollar for, you know, compared to what they could have signed him for 2 years ago when they initially wanted him and went with Foles instead. Dalton might not even be on this roster. In fact, Andy Dalton could be starting in Washington. He could be starting, again, and I use that loosely because Washington, yes, they have Ryan Fitzpatrick, but are we really sold on Ryan Fitzpatrick to win football games? I know the fantasy world loves him, but in terms of winning football games, if he was really all that, why was he a career journeyman? But the more realistic landing spot, if they move off of Andy Dalton, is Houston, because we don't know what the hell is going on with Deshaun Watson. Justin Fields going to be a week one starter. There's a lot of pressure on Ryan Pace. There's a lot of pressure on Matt Nagy to go not only win football games and make the playoffs, but there's a lot of pressure to hit on this pick. Now, Nagy does come from Kansas City, and why is that notable? Because Patrick Mahomes sat a year behind Alex Smith. Could it happen under a different circumstance? Like Andy Reid, we know his job was safe. If we knew that Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy's job was safe no matter what, then I think we see a situation in which, listen, maybe they sit the quarterback for a couple of games, if not the whole year, a la Patrick Mahomes. Because Chicago has made the playoffs, I believe, two times in the Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy era, and I believe both times with Mitchell Trubisky, because they've managed to win eight games with a disastrous offense last year. There's immense pressure to not only go win those eight games, but to go make a playoff run, go win 10, 11, 12 games. So that is why I believe we see Justin Fields as soon as week one.
Pressure, jobs on the line.
ATL Mikey, yes, I did grade Miami an A. Oh, are you arguing that should I give them a B? That's your team. I don't understand. Is that a, what kind of statement is that? I don't hate their draft. I actually like their draft. I gave out seven A's in this article. To sum it up, I had seven A's ranging from A minus to A plus, and then I had seven C's and D's ranging from obviously C plus down to D or D minus. I don't know what the lowest one was, but seven and seven, the rest were B minus to B plus. But yeah, I liked Miami's draft. Waddle and Jalen Phillips, like if Jalen Phillips hits, that pass rushing upside, I keep going back to this, not the best class for pass rushers and interior defensive linemen. Jalen Phillips could be the best, but he does have that injury bug, that injury hold in the back. But if he gets over that, man, he will be a monster in one of the best defenses in the NFL, ATL. And then in the second round, Javon Holland, really good cover safety. Liam Eichenberg, offensive tackle. Like, they did really well with the first four picks. Then coming back in the third with Hunter Long. And I love Miami's tight end room. Whether you look at Gesicki, Adam Shaheen, you now have Hunter Long and Smythe. Really good and underrated tight end room. They like to use these guys. They're outside of Gesicki, they're more blocking assets. But again, when you have that New England pedigree with Brian Flores, I understand the logic. And then in the seventh round, they get a couple of guys. I don't really care about that. But those first five picks in rounds 1 to 3, Miami knocked it out of the park. A big time winner fantasy football wise out of Miami. Obviously, they didn't get a running back. Is Myles Gaskin. They did sign Malcolm Brown, who's a nice third down back, pass protection, goal line guy. But as long as they don't go and sign one of these lingering free agent backs, and I don't think there's a need for Todd Gurley in Miami, Myles Gaskin, and I really like him in fantasy last year, I'm all in on Myles Gaskin in 2021, another big-time winner coming out of this draft. Sean, as a Steelers fan, is saying he agrees. He was hoping they would go O-line around two instead of tight end. They don't use the tight end well in Pittsburgh. You probably have to go back to Heath Miller the last time their tight end was really, really effective, Sean. Even with Big Villanueva re-signs with them, his play was not great. Yeah, he's getting older. Now, I believe Villanueva and Dennis Kelly are both scheduled to visit with the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, that would be a big FU to Pittsburgh to not only sign a player from a position of need, but you play in that division, you compete with them. They're your bitter rival. So that's pretty big if Villanueva signs with Baltimore. Sean's also saying about Dwayne Haskins. Listen, Sean, I don't know if you caught the show a few weeks ago with Jim Coventry when we really did a nice little deep dive on Pittsburgh. He's a little bit optimistic on Dwayne Haskins. And Dwayne Haskins, let's face it, didn't work in Washington. Not many guys do until the Ron Rivera era began. And I know that Haskins had a shot there for whatever reason. It just didn't work. Maybe a poor work ethic. But now you go to Pittsburgh, and if you're Haskins, you have another opportunity. And if I'm Dwayne Haskins, whatever the hell I did in Washington, I would do the exact opposite in Pittsburgh. Because, listen, if you can get your game together, you could be Dwayne Haskins. You could be the heir apparent to Ben Roethlisberger. For Pittsburgh, you're paying this guy nothing. That's a win for Pittsburgh. And Dwayne Haskins, let's not forget, he is a former, top 16 pick? He gets his head out of his ass. Great way to put it, Sean. You could have stolen your heir apparent to Big Ben. ATL's back with another question. Man, we are approaching the hour mark. So what I'm going to do is we're going to get to the rest of these few questions, and then we're going to wrap it up. This was a great show. This went by really fast. Had a lot of fun today, guys. Thanks, and keep the questions coming. I know we veered away from questions for a little bit, but we want to get back to the questions. We want to be interactive with you guys. You guys drive the show. My favorite episodes, especially closer to the season and in season, when we can't even, when I have my show notes in front of me and my script, and all you guys are doing, you're asking questions the whole time. I don't even have to look at that. Those are my favorite shows. You guys were very active today, so please, please keep it coming. And I do want to note, moving forward, I know I came on a little bit late today, but I'm going to try to hammer down the schedule, whether I'm on 4 days a week, 5 days a week. I want to have a schedule of these are the days I'm going to be here. I'm going to be here at 5:30 p.m. Eastern. You know when to expect me. I want to start tightening things up to have a really, really big year at the FF Faceoff. So ATL was asking, what team do I think will be picking number one in 2022? He believes it's Houston. You're not going out on a limb. If there's a future draft bet for who's going to get the number one overall pick next year, I would say Houston opens at minus 500. That's how, they're going to be pathetic. They were pathetic last year, and that was with Deshaun Watson. Can you imagine if they don't have Deshaun? That they're going to be, I don't even know if atrocious is the word of how bad the Houston Texans are going to be. I don't even have words. It's bad. This is a team, and I'm going to veer off. A couple of years ago, J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney, Deshaun Watson, DeAndre Hopkins. Who the hell was it? Yeah, you had stars all over the place. You were getting into the playoffs. You were winning divisions. Now, your quarterback might be Tyrod Taylor. Your number one wide receiver might be Brandon Cooks. I like Brandon Cooks. But, who's behind him? Kiki QT. Still waiting for that thing to happen. Running back, an aging David Johnson. Philip Lindsay might be the best back on that roster when it's all said and done. And the defense, forget about it. So I'm with you, ATL. Houston might be the number one overall pick. Here's a long shot. How about Philly? What if the Nick Sirianni and Jalen Hurts project goes in the wrong direction? That could be a disaster that I don't feel like enough people are talking about in Philadelphia. But I did like their draft. But again, when you have that many holes, unless you completely miss on all your picks, obviously you're going to have a decent draft because you have a lot of needs. Oh, okay. Yeah, ATL was just acknowledging my grade on Miami. Yeah, I love the draft. And listen, I know I like to bust your balls or just bust the balls of Tua Tagovailoa a lot. But he just doesn't do it for me. It won't take me long to buy in. If Tua looks good out the gate, they surrounded him with the weapons, and I'm not going to be that guy. Well, Tua's only good because he has weapons. Guess what? Patrick Mahomes has weapons. Everybody else, Dak has weapons. Everybody has weapons. The only guy that doesn't really need weapons right now is Aaron Rodgers, where he has Devontae Adams and Aaron Jones and, I guess, Tanyan Pop. But obviously, you don't need a lot with Aaron Rodgers. There's only one Aaron Rodgers. Obviously, you put enough around Tua and he does succeed. Good for him. I'm in. But if it doesn't happen, Miami is going to be looking for a new quarterback next year. And I hope it does happen for Tua because I like Brian Flores and I like the Dolphins. They won 10 games last year, and I would love to see them build off of what they have already going. Again, to win that many games, it sucked that they missed the playoffs. I think they win 10-11 this year and sneak in. So that'll do it for today. Yeah, Sean, thank you. And yeah, keep the dynasty questions coming. Again, thanks for asking. So that's going to do it for today's show. Tomorrow, we will be back in some capacity. You know, I'll let you know what we're talking about on my Twitter. But until then, this was a really awesome show. I hope you have a good and safe Monday night. I know I'm going to try to watch a little bit of wrestling tonight. And again, it's been a very, very busy few weeks with the draft and the NFL. Be nice to hopefully take a nice couple hours off, maybe smoke a little bit, and really unwind for once. But until tomorrow, see you guys later, and have a good night.